Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of the Here's Johnny podcast. I am your host, Larry.
And I'm your other host, Justin. I think so
this is the first of our two pre-recorded episodes.
Yes.
By now, audience, you know that I am in the midst of another cross-country move, heading back to the great old Buckeye State. My stuff is in transit. Hopefully it actually arrives on time, because we're only pre-recording two episodes. So keep your fingers crossed when you hear this. And if you believe in the big guy upstairs, maybe send one out for me, because I don't think I can go through my stuff being a week late again.
Yeah, you must just love moving. That's what I've learned.
I'm never moving again. This is the last time. but yeah, so know what's new with us, because it would be old by now. But as you can tell from the title, this is now our third book review.
And I believe it's the first one to be just like...
to not be a test. We tested American Psycho, and we tested Dr. Sleep, which are both now live to everybody. And actually, American Psycho is doing really, really well in downloads, which is crazy to me, because I felt cringy as hell when I reviewed that. But yeah, this is a top five book for me personally. And Justin knew that going in. So sit back, relax. Welcome to our book club. And Justin, play me some scary music. Let's review Stephen King's Salem's Lot. I do have some background on this, Justin.
Okay, interesting.
Not a whole lot, but I did go to the Wikipedia page and find some stuff out.
Oh, so you pulled on me. Okay.
Well, that's how I always do it. I always do Wikipedia. Yeah. I might follow some links and stuff, but...
yeah, I just meant like not bringing a lot.
Oh, I mean, I think I still have more than your Oberdin.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
All right. So it's a 1975 horror novel, and it's the sophomore effort from horror legend Stephen King, a.k.a. it's the second book he released.
Yeah, I will say, for some reason... it's like people saying months with babies. Just say it's the second sophomore. One. Just say that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't get that. Anyways.
Standard diction there. It's English, my friend. It won the Lotus Award for the all-time best fantasy novel in 1987. King has said on two separate occasions publicly that this is his favorite novel he has ever written.
And you get that, definitely, for sure.
I mean, I agree. I don't disagree. The town proper is revisited twice by King in short stories. First one is Jerusalem's Lot, and the second one is One for the Road. Both are in Night Shift, which came out in 1978.
So does this have like any connection from King himself to like the sequel that I found out exists?
No.
Like the okay. All right.
No, I actually fell down that rabbit hole. I want to talk about that too.
Okay.
King has said he has no plans on a sequel, and he feels that Father Callahan's arc in the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
Because he pops up in that. He feels like that kind of negates any need for there ever to be a sequel to this.
See, I wonder if he said the same thing about The Shining back in the day.
So according to the author's note, which I think we both read when we read Dr. Sleep, he said that Danny Torrance never left him. And yeah, I think that if he's that saying day, this is his favorite, if he's saying that this is his favorite novel, I think part of the reason why is that like it's complete. You know what I mean? Like I we'll get into that in plot and stuff, but I really think that this story is here. There is nothing else. There's no more veins to tap, as you will. So there have been adaptations made about this. There's the Tobe Hooper TV movie that came out in 1979, and we're reviewing that next week.
Yes. I'm excited for that.
I haven't seen it for a long time. and I have issues with it, but we'll get to that when we get to that. There was a Larry Cohen-directed sequel to Hooper's film, which kind of looked at like life after the vampires took over the town.
Okay, weird.
So that's what the sequel's about that you talked about. Return to Salem's Lot. It's about, yeah, it's, yeah. TNT Network had an adaptation in 2004 starring Rob Lowe, and surprisingly enough, that was nominated for an Emmy. But I remember watching it and hating it.
Is it, like, well-received, like, not by critics?
I didn't dive too far into it because, like I said, I've only seen it, like, twice, and I did not like either experience.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair enough.
In April of 2019, New Line Cinema announced they were making a theatrical adaptation. Gary Dauberman, he who wrote It Part 1 and 2, and James Wan are producing this film.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see it when we see it, I guess.
Keep your fingers crossed, because I would pay lots of money to watch James Wan take. I know he's on directing it, and maybe he'll step in. I don't know, but yes.
Is he still doing like the Resident Evil thing? Or is that like
he's attached to it, I think, in some way. I'm not sure. I haven't heard anything about that for a while. Yeah. Last thing. There was a UK radio drama made in 1995.
Okay. I can get behind a radio drama.
Could be kind of cool. Yeah. I think. That's all I have for background. Again, on book reviews, we don't do 6-second plot summaries, but I will give a brief synopsis. So if you haven't read this, you don't know what it's about, spoilers ahead. Basically, in the early 1970s, a vampire and his minion moved to a small town that was prepared for them by another minion. And like a virus, they slowly take over the town. And the people are just helpless to what's going on.
Slowly at first, but yes, I agree.
And that's the plot, man.
Yeah, it's so I would actually like to tell you what I didn't like first, because it feeds into what I like. So when I started with the audiobook of this, you had told me that for you it was a mystery novel.
When I read this as a kid in fifth or sixth grade, yes.
So.
Because I did not know it was a vampire. I actually have my copy of it.
Yeah.
It's hardbound. I don't have like the actual cover on it. It's just the spine. So I did not know it's a vampire book.
Okay. So I won't lie, like going into it thinking it was a mystery novel actually like really, really put me off for like the first third or even a quarter of the book.
Okay.
And then kind of once I realized that, no, this is just like a straight up monster, like a monster book, if you will, like a monster movie almost, but book form, it really started to hit home. I really started to enjoy it. I personally, I don't think there's any mystery in it.
I think there is. I think part of that is, I think it's just time. And I think it's just the status the book and the name Salem's Lot has kind of accumulated. I think so many people now just know it's vampires. But I think when the book came out, and a lot of like the critical analysis that I've read, like I said, I love this book. Like I have read people's like theses on this, right? Like I enjoy hearing people's thoughts on it. A lot of people feel like it's a mystery novel, mainly because nothing's explicitly stated. You're kind of getting little tidbits, right? Like you get like glimpses of the town, and then like you find the dead dog, and the boy disappears, and it's like these little tiny things that start building up a case. You know what I mean? But I think you knew going in it was vampire. I mean, it was in the season. I told you about it. I'm sure even before I told you about it, you knew Salem's Lot by Stephen King was a vampire story, right?
Yeah.
I think I got lucky. Because I was a kid and the internet wasn't around and the copy of the book I had didn't have a picture on the cover. But I think when it first came out, I think that's how it was written. Because you got to think, the only thing before this from King that came out was Carrie.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I it's just because I remember talking to you about it. And, like, I even brought up the fact that when the guy has the two holes in the neck.
Uh-huh.
Like, for me,
that was a giveaway, like, for me, too. No, you're totally right. Okay. That was my giveaway. Like, that was like, okay, this is what... We're here.
That's well, where see, we're at. And, like, so when that happened, I was like, okay, so if this is the obvious giveaway... I was waiting for something to surprise me or be a mystery after that.
And well, that's when so I know you knew it was vampires, but when you get the scene of Straker killing the kid and doing the Lord of Flies prayer, did you know that was vampire? Like, you know it's a vampire story, but would you have thought that was vampire?
No, but I don't think it would be like, see, when I think of, like, a mystery novel, I think, like, it's an entire build up to this, like, huge dramatic reveal.
So I guess, like, to me, I don't think it's, maybe calling it a mystery novel is the wrong way. Yeah. I guess it's more like they don't explicitly state vampires on page one.
Yeah, and I honestly, like,
there's an implicit build up to it.
Like, once I started just kind of like, okay, this to me personally isn't a mystery novel. It's just going to be like a fun monster novel. Yeah. I honestly, my enjoyment, like, skyrocketed. Like, I will tell you this right now. When I went into it, a mystery novel, I was like, this is the worst mystery ever. I hate this. And then once I kind of dropped that and kind of replaced it with this just it's just going to be a fun monster book, or however you want to say that, I started to really, really enjoy it.
Well, maybe that's my fault then, maybe, for telling you that, because I guess you're kind of right. Like, it's not, the whole thing's not a mystery novel, it's more of a slow build to a reveal. But that's fine. One of the biggest pros, and one of the reasons why I say this isn't just like my favorite King novel, why I say it's one of my favorite novels, is I like the amount of time King spends in building the town of Salem's Lot and its characters. I like how he keeps revisiting them, even if, like, they don't play any implicit part to the story. And I like how every single person who is mentioned is fleshed out, well-developed, and you literally know their motivations. Like, the groundskeeper at the dump, the old lady who sits on the phone lines, listens to the gossip, the weasel and the hostile ladies, like, relationship, and how that's all fleshed out. There is so much detail in this. I know you don't mean it like this, but to just call it a monster novel, it's just not fair. Like, this is literally a piece of American life pulled and put on the page. Like, this literally describes, like, an American town and how said American town would react to this vampiric plague.
Yeah, and by all means, I don't mean like you said. I don't mean it as a slur. I'm just like, I don't know how else to put that in it. But, like, as soon as I dropped the mystery part of my expectations, I enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah. And to follow up what I said, a big criticism of this, at least what I see people talk about, is that it's dated.
I can get behind that.
It's the 70s, right? Yeah. So, cell phones, internet. But I think the story still stands on its own. And I think that it is one of the scariest books I've ever read. Because even with modern technology, I grew up in a small town. Maybe not as small as Salem's Lot, but small enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can absolutely see this story unfolding in my hometown, even today. It might be different. The steps might be different. But the idea of the vampire being a plague is something that I really, really love. And I think it's one of my favorite ways to look at vampirism, too.
Yeah, and like... See, that's kind of like a weird criticism, like, dated, because personally, I mean, like, It's not like it was written in the 70s, but like the date in the book is like the 2000s. Like, yeah, it's written in the time it was written. So that's like a really weird disconnect for me.
Because people say that about like Moby Dick and like Dracula and stuff, and it's like, you're missing the damn point, guys. Like, you're being a pretentious ass for no reason.
Wait, you're telling me that somebody didn't have a cell phone in the 1970s? Like, come on. That's stupid.
I love our two main characters, Ben Mears and Mike. And one thing that I really like, and I'm not sure if it was in the opening segment for you, but King had as an author note in one of my versions. I have like three or four different copies of this book. But King talks about how he wanted to kill all the humans. He wanted them all to die.
Yeah, he didn't actually talk. I didn't hear that author's note.
He wanted everybody to die. And he said that, surprisingly enough, a couple were too strong for him to kill. And to me, I think that's one of the reasons why, even though King has laid some eggs when it comes to endings, which I've talked about, I think King lets his characters go. I think King writes characters. I think that's what we talk about. Let's talk about how he's these very well fleshed out people. And then he lets them live in his story. You know what I mean? And I think Ben and Mike both prove their worth to survive. You know what I mean? Like they did the right things. They made mistakes, but they made less than others. And I don't know. Because I know you said you had a problem with how the book opened, right?
Yes, but I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was just like, if it felt off, because I wasn't like I'm still not used to like King's writing.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if it was just like a little, like I haven't gone back and listened to it since I listened to it and that was it. I didn't go back and listen to certain, like, I didn't go back and like re-listen to it or anything like that, because I wanted it to be like a fresh take. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if it was just like the verbiage or something, but like,
even if it's off air, I would like for you to, now that you have the whole story in your head, to, because for me, flipping to the front of the book after you finish it, reading the first like six pages is no big deal. Try it. Let me know. It doesn't have to be on a podcast or anything, but I am curious to know how you feel knowing where the story went.
Okay. Yeah.
Another plot point, Barlow. Love him. And it's going to be my biggest complaint next week when we review Toby Hooper's, is Barlow is Dracula. I mean, he's not, but he's sophisticated. He's well-spoken. He's well-dressed. He looks the part of what you see when you think of Dracula. Hooper makes it more of a Nosferatu kind of character. And again, you will have already heard a Nosferatu review, and you hear our review of Salem's Lot. But to me, the scarier Dracula is the one that doesn't, like, the scarier kind of vampire is the one you don't know is a vampire.
Yes, I agree. And like, I like the way he is presented in this book, because I mean, to me personally, I mean, it could be just because of like cultural knowledge and stuff like that I knew that he was a vampire. Mm-hmm. But when you were hearing about him, like, even just the way that Stryker talked about him,
mm-hmm,
was like,
I love it.
Like, clearly this guy is like infatuated in a way with his master.
Absolutely.
And like, I don't know. He was, to me, I actually think Barlow is the best written person in this book.
Oh yeah. I like Mike a lot.
Yeah. Oh, Mike's a badass kid.
I really, really like Mike. I like our introduction to him. I like his build up. I like his reaction to how his parents are like raising him and stuff. I just really, really like Mike. But no, Barlow's good. And that kind of leads into the last pro that I really want to hit, and then we can move on if you want to, if you have stuff you want to bring up. But a lot of vampire material, and I think we're going to get into this, and we'll definitely talk about this in Our Vampire Still Scary, which is an episode, in case you couldn't tell from the pilot of this season, is something I'm really looking to sink my teeth into. But this book holds true all of the vampiric law. Can't come in unless you're invited in. There's certain rites that have to be done to prepare the talent for the vampire to come in. He's called by these dark omens. He spreads like a virus, right? He needs the minion to help him do stuff. He has these... And then I like how King... But King still makes it his own. Like the cross, when the pastor loses his faith, it's not the actual cross. It's the faith in the cross. Yeah. And that's what causes Callahan to have his downfall. And I don't know, man. It's... The scene... We'll get into how scary, I'm sure. But when Mike's friend is scratching at his window...
Yeah, see, now, again, and, I think this is actually to a fault of us talking of it, is I remember you telling me that there's a window scene that is creepy, and then I was expecting it, and then it just wasn't, I don't know, it just didn't hit, but I think it's because...
I think it will hit more when you see the movie. It's actually one of the better parts of the whole film is the window scene, but I appreciate it, man. There's something to me about holding true to, like, the rules. You know what I mean? It's why Scream has such a special place in my heart, is because it, like, lays out the rules, you know, and it follows them, but then it kind of doesn't too. You know what I mean? So it's like showing, like, homage to what's come before and respect, but then moving it forward. And I think King did that, because in the copy that I have, he talks about how he read Dracula as a kid and how it always stuck with him, and how this was kind of his attempt to bring Dracula to modern day, or at least the 70s when he wrote it. And I think he does a great job. I honestly think that, like, I'm not just BSing when I say that this is a top book for me. I love it to death.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I guess kind of giving it away now, but this is probably for the show. I mean, I know that's only three books, but it's probably the favorite one I've read. Yeah, probably the best one I've read.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get as a book for each season we go into. Okay. But I don't know. I love it. I really do. Okay, so no score. I was going to give a 5-star at the end and then average it out and then accept it. But verbiage. I have some quotes. Before we get into the quotes, I'm just going to say it's King. If you like how King writes, you're going to like this. If you don't like how King writes, you're not going to like it.
Yeah, I'd actually like to start, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Just because listening to it, I didn't actually write the quote I liked down. That's fine. But we kind of touched on it. It's actually like, it's not even like a quote. It's like the entire scene between the father and Barlow when he loses his faith. Like that whole just, and how he, like Barlow straight up tells him, if you put your cross down, you would have lived.
Yeah.
But because you didn't.
Because you didn't have faith. That's what I'm saying. Like, it goes back to the plot and it goes back to why I like this book so much, is like, it takes it that next step. You know what I mean? And,
I won't lie. That was my favorite part of the book. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that's the reason why I think King took Father Callahan and added him the Dark Tower, is because he had more to say with him. You know what I mean?
So, I kind of a side note to this. Does he. Did I read The Dark Tower? I don't remember if I did or not.
He comes up in The Wolves of Kala or whatever it is. I forget. He's in two of the Dark Tower books.
Is it like the same universe, Dr. Father Callahan? Like,
oh, yeah.
And is it based after or before?
After.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. I'll definitely
I don't want to give that away right now because I want people to listen if they've at least read Stan's Law. I don't want to like spoil Dark Tower for him, but
okay.
But if you want that, obviously Rachel, guest of the show, she has the Dark Tower podcast, so you can find out all about Father Callahan, I'm sure, over there. I have 5 quotes.
Yeah, go for it.
I have 4 short ones, 1 long one. I want to do 2 short ones, a long one, and then 2 short ones.
Okay, hit me.
All right, the first. The basis of all human fears, he thought, a closed door, slightly ajar. And yeah, if anybody's walked through a house and you see a door at the end of the hallway and it's just slightly open, yeah. Like, it's primordial. And I just thought it was the way it was phrased was great.
I mean, it's interesting. I think it's – while I'm not used to how King writes yet, I think – I can definitely tell I'm starting to, because I'm starting to – I mean, it just flat out enjoy it more.
Yeah, absolutely. Next. Crying was like pissing everything out on the ground. I just like it. I was like, yeah.
So who said these? I'm curious.
Oh just my gosh, I typed them up, but I haven't written down. I think the crying was like pissing everything out on the ground. I think that was Mike.
Yeah,
and the basis of all human fears, he thought. That's pretty sure that's Ben.
Yeah,
almost 100% sure of
this. Yeah, so. Yeah, that's
fair. Hopefully I'll hold these next ones, but we'll see. All right, my long one. But when fall comes, kicking summer out on its treacherous ass as it always does one day, sometime after the mid-20th of September, it stays a while, like an old friend that you have missed. It settles in the way an old friend will settle into your favorite chair and take out his pipe and light it, and then fill the afternoon with stories of places he has been and things he has done since last he saw you. I love fall, and that is a perfect way to describe it.
Yeah, yeah, very... very fitting. I mean, you got to add like a chance of snow if you're in Canada, like a lot of rain, but yeah, no,
but I agree. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, I think by the time summer is over, I think everybody's ready for the cool. And the thing is, I mean, I'm 28. I've had 28 falls, maybe 20 that I remember very explicitly, maybe 26, 20, something like that. But they all have that same feel. The crunch of the leaves, the changing of the colors, the cool night air, football, like hot chocolate, like there's just something about it. Like he's right. Like it's, you always feel like it's coming back to say hi again. And
yeah,
I don't know. I like it. All right. Two more short ones. And I think these ones are, again, I will do this from now on, but I think these are just narrator quotes.
Okay.
The town kept its secrets and the Marston house brooded over it like a ruined king.
I love whenever they talk about the Marston house
in the backstory.
Not even that, like it's just like Ben is always like
he's obsessed
looking
with it.
For
it, yeah. It's the reason why he came back, and that's why it's so cool, and like it's like all these threads kind of connect together, and you can definitely see that King liked what he did with the Marston house, and that's why spooky houses kind of pop back up, you know, yeah, later on different novels and stuff. But yeah, that's great. And I it's definitely a character.
Oh, yeah, yes.
I think we kind of brushed over that during plot, but the Marston house itself is, like he says, it's like a king. It's like it rules over the town up on this hill, looking down everybody and kind of like dictating what happens. And I don't know. It's great. Like I said, it's good. One last quote, and then we'll move on to House Scary. And all around them, the bestiality of the night rises on tenebrous wings. The vampire's time has come. That's at the end of the novel when the vampires have taken over the town.
Yeah, and it was such like an interesting, like, I so have fast. Yet to hit these eggs, these like horrible eggs. I mean, I didn't really like the end of Cujo, but I think that I'm lucky to be going through like the good ones first.
If you want that, I can hold your hand and guide you to the best ones. And then can go, and I think, like, so I read them in chronological order for the most part. But I think the best way to do King is to read the best and then slowly take in the eggs.
Like a fairy, slowly take them in.
Yes. Eventually you'll have to take them all in to finish if you want to read them all, but there's so many gems that you can avoid it.
I get a credit every month for Audible, so I'm open for it.
I love King. I really do. Like I said, I fully admit where his flaws are at. But yeah, just the way he phrases stuff, the vampire's time has come, and for poor Jerusalem's lot, my lord, it came.
Yes.
How scary. A little bit of backstory. I think I've already talked about this. It is the second King novel I read, because I read Carrie first, and I was told that you have to read them in order. And I specifically remember not knowing it was a vampire story. I remember reading this in my bedroom at night with a flashlight, and I was in the basement. That's where my bedroom was at. So I remember it being dark, under a blanket, with a flashlight, reading a King novel, knowing what was going to be scary and not knowing what was going on. And I remember being terrified. Like, there are certain parts of this book, the faith, you already brought it up, him losing his faith, the reveal of Barlow, which we'll get to, and the window scene. Because I had a little tiny, like, little grate window, you know what I'm talking about?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So I can kind of imagine, like, someone scratching and saying, let me in. And I have read this book yearly for the last 3 or 4 years. And I definitely, I remember the first time I read it, I started it over. This is one of the few books that I literally finished, turned back around, and reread it right away. It's just, and I think it's even more than the vampires, to be really, really honest. I think it's more the town and the people in it. You know them. And you kind of, like, maybe in your own life, maybe the way he describes them, but like, you have like an intimate connection to them. And to see them start going down, in the way they start going down, that's heavy shit, man. Like, it's dark, it's heavy, it's foreboding, it's great. And I mean, you can read further into it, obviously. Like, I'm older now than when I first read it, and there's more going on to it. Like, you can definitely talk about like the fall of like the American town, right? The small town doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And maybe Barlow stands for a whole lot more than just a vampire, and that's totally fine. But I don't think that's the podcast for this. Like, that's not what we're trying to do here. Like, we could do it, but that's not what I want to do with this book. It's spooky. It scared me, and it scared me as a kid. I have more points. What else do you have?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised we haven't brought this up. One of the, like, I get really okay. So my basement has like these wooden stairs, and they're like really creaky, and I'm like, I've always been scared that they're just gonna like break. So weirdly enough, one of the biggest scenes in the book that hit me, like hit it home for me, was when they go back to the hostel, and they've like the vampires have like taken it the basement stairs, and like set it up with like a bunch of knives. Mm-hmm. I don't know, something. Ugh. Yeah, it's like bone chilling.
Yeah, no, you are spot on, 100% spot on.
Well, and like, just like the way they present that scene too is like, at first you don't know what happens because Mike just comes running out.
Yeah,
you have to wait until Ben goes down there to see what's going on. And I don't know, it's really good.
Next thing that scared me, I want to say Barlow for last. Make sure I don't forget it.
Okay.
Susan. When she dies.
Like dies or like...
Turns into a vampire.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't ready for it, man. I did not think... Again, I was a kid when I read this. And I did not think that there was going to be even the possibility that she didn't make it to the end. And obviously we kind of knew because she wasn't with them, right? So maybe I should have picked up on that as a kid. But I never thought she wouldn't have lived.
See, like, it's interesting that you say that because, like, this being my first time, I'm right there with you. Like, I thought for sure when she went alone, I was like, okay, she's going to die. But then Mike came in and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, maybe, like, she has a chance. I mean, she's, like, the protagonist's, like, love interest.
Yeah.
And just, like...
And then, like, a part of me thought maybe they would try to, like, kill Barlow and, like, save her. But they didn't. And the killer.
Yep.
And that's heavy stuff, man. That's, like I said, there's just, this is so great. Like, you guys read this book. Like, it's so great. Like, we're reviewing this the day before Halloween. So, like, it's perfect time for it now. But I know you'll probably be hearing this in December, but I'm telling you, like, this is one you take the time for. Okay. I think I've hit everything else that really, really needs pointed out. I talked about vampirism being like a disease and how I really, really like that, especially as someone who like studies, like who like went to school for this kind of stuff. And I love it. But now, Barlow.
Okay.
It's going to be why next week I'm going to have a lot of negative to say about Tobe Hooper's movie.
Okay.
I like my vampires humanoid. When they feed, they can change. We'll get to that in Lost Boys, which, again, you still haven't seen, you crazy person. But I like their general appearance to be human. Maybe eccentric, maybe a little aloof, but human.
And I get that because, I mean, that's something you can, like, identify with. And yes, it kind of hits closer to home, and I'm right there with you.
I honestly, don't get me wrong, like, Nosferatu is... Like, even if you've never seen that movie, you hear that name and that face is in your head.
Yeah.
Immediately.
Oh, big time. Yeah.
With there is no question that it is just what it is. But to me, I think it's scarier when you can't place it. You know what I mean? Like you can't place the vampire. It's like, I know there's a lot of eye-rolly things about Twilight, but like they sparkle in the sunlight and they're so gorgeous. They're so much more gorgeous than everybody else. It's like, no, like they blend in. They you don't point them out. Like maybe, like I said, maybe they're a little bit more well-to-do, but like you can't point them out. And when you couple that with the idea of the vampirism being like a plague and a disease slowly creeping through the town, and you not know where it came from and who's spreading it and stuff. And I love it, man. I think Barlow in the rogues gallery that King has created of his monsters and villains, I think Barlow, if not on top, is way up there. And I think Pennywise probably unseats him because he's just been portrayed so well by two amazing actors. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think Barlow's got a chance
coming up here. And there's even theories about how Pennywise knew Barlow and stuff. Like the King multiverse is a messy, messy spider web. But I don't know. Spooky. Scares me. It doesn't scare me anymore. I've read it a ton, right? But I will never forget the first time reading this book, reading it in 3 days, 3 nights, and just turning off the flashlight, coming out from under the covers, looking across the room to that window, and wondering who's going to be sitting there. And in a world where I've watched a lot of scary movies, and I've played a lot of scary games, and I've read a lot of scary books, that this is one of the ones that really sits separate.
That's fair. I mean, I definitely can see that, yeah.
All right, Impact. Pretty obvious, guys. King says it's his favorite. There's been several adaptations. Father Callahan reappeared in Dark Tower. A lot of people do believe that Pennywise at least met Barlow or took some inspiration from Barlow at some point. There's some crossover between the two of them.
Written crossover? Like,
So it's weird. Okay. So I want to dive into this a little bit. And again, I might be rusty. Don't kill me, but I know that this is something. Pennywise, the giant space monster.
Yeah.
Appears at one point like Barlow. It's not explicit, but if you go onto the wikis and you go onto like deep dive sites, it's pretty well established that there was at least at some point a connection between those two. How it happened, I mean, it's the King multiverse. It's a...
Oh, yeah, because they're all supposed to be set in like the same universe, right?
Something like that. They reference each other, and sometimes they contradict each other. It's a...
A messy web, like you
said. It's like the Legend of Zelda timeline. Like, you can make one for yourself, but do you feel clean afterwards? Did you feel good diving into that mess? But yeah, as far as I'm aware, I think it's King's only vampire novel. I could be wrong on that, but there's really none that come to mind for me other than this one. And I don't think King really has a reason to go back to him. Like, I think.
I mean, he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, I think he did it justice. I mean, I love this, and I don't have a desire for a Jerusalem's Lot 2, you know? I mean, he kind of blew me away with Dr. Sleep. I didn't want Dr. Sleep, but I read it, and I was really surprised by it. Obviously, you guys have heard that review by now. But I'm happy with where the story ends. I'm happy with where we're at. I'm happy with the idea, with the open tendrils it kind of leaves behind. I'm happy. Maybe happy is the wrong word. I think it's cool thinking that there's a town like Salem's Lot just sitting out there, you know, kind of like how it was cool just thinking about there's a true knot riding around in caravans around the country. And it's kind of that stuff, right? And you mentioned this in Oberdin. It's like the stuff makes you keep thinking. Salem's Lot always makes me think about it. There are times I'll just be sitting and then I'll start thinking about stuff in Salem's Lot or the idea of Barlow, how it would translate today. Could a vampire still do it? is the scariest kind of vampire the one that's like Nosferatu, or is the one that's like a quiet plague that sneaks in and starts taking over before you realize that you're screwed?
Yeah.
I think it's probably the, and I like, obviously I wrote the ode to Darren Shan in a blog post last year, and Darren responded to it, which still shocks me because he wrote some of my favorite vampire books. But I think it's the best vampire novel out there, and I'm even putting that up there with Dracula. I think his impact is great. I like the kind of vampire that he made, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think really like a way to even judge the impact is like when you say, okay, perfect example is when you told me, oh, we should do Salem's Lot. I instantly knew, I mean, what it was, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's important for the impact because literally like everybody knows what it is. Well, not maybe not everybody, but you know what I mean. Like the general horror audience. I think
if you
dived
in the horror, or if you know of King, I think it would be near impossible to not know Salem's Lot.
Exactly.
So score. I think it's probably obvious. It's a 5 for me. Like this, like I'm not joking. This is one of the books to me. And if you want to know my other ones, that's. We can talk about that off air. You can send me an email or DM me or talk to me on Twitter. But this is a top 5 novel ever. It's 5-star. And don't feel like you have to do it. Like obviously we don't influence each other's scores, but that's where it is for me.
I'm going to be 100% honest here, and I am going to give it a 4-star.
Okay, so 4.5 and, then?
Yeah, and okay. And honestly, like, it would be a 4.5 for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I honestly, it was just like that first little bit. And again, it was more just like the mindset as I was going through it.
Sure.
But it was like, it's like how you feel about Vampire Hunter D. Where I was like, oh, fuck, I gotta read this.
Yeah.
Or I gotta listen to it.
Like, but it changed though, right? Like, that was kind of where you were at first. And then
that's what I'm saying. Flipped. Like, it went from like, a chore to like a great book.
Yeah.
And like, I'm happy I read it now. So,
yeah.
Or so, listen to it or however the hell.
No, it's fine.
It.
You can call it that. Yeah. It's fine. So, guys, that's a review of Salem's Lot. If you've read it, if you agree, if you disagree, if you have thoughts, send us an email, send us a message on Twitter. We'd love to hear it. But, Justin, go ahead and play that commercial and let's head on into the closing.
Ghosts, split souls. Monsters, sociopathic villains, cold-blooded murders, and nightmares becoming reality. Does this sound like horror to you? Actually, these are all things that can be found in the Harry Potter series.
It can be scarier than you might think.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Audrey.
And in our podcast, Wizard Studies, we talk about all these parts of the wizarding world, and even some more lighthearted stuff.
We can be found anywhere you listen to your podcasts and on Instagram and Facebook as Wizard Studies Podcast and Twitter as Wizard Studies.
Now back to your regularly scheduled horror talk on Here's Johnny.
Justin, thank you for doing that with me. I know I haven't picked short books for us to read yet, or light books when it came to American Psycho. Although that was kind of just like a random chance. Like I said, I was going to start reading it and you said you were going to listen to it. So we decided to try it out. But I have ideas for next season and maybe the book will be shorter.
Yeah, I think we should try to go with somebody that's not King. I think.
I know. It's just so... Well, this one was... When you're doing vampires, I would have.
Oh yeah, been. Yeah. No, I agree. Like this is.
It was this or Dracula, and this is a much more enjoyable read than Dracula, especially for someone like you who listens and doesn't actually read.
Yeah.
Oh, Dracula probably would suck to listen. Actually, it might be better to listen to. I don't know. We'll think about that. Next week, we are reviewing Toby Hooper's Salem's Lot. As of this recording, the plan is to review. The TV version, not the release for theaters version. So the 3 hour and some minute long one.
Ugh. Yeah, why did we agree to that again?
You wanted to do it. I wasn't even going to include it. You wanted it. So
yeah.
That's where we're at. again, reach out to us on Twitter or anything. Justin, any last notes for the audience? I know this is pre-recorded, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's in December, so... I mean, there's something I forgot to say in Overton, but December just seems like too late, so I'll get them in the next one.
Okay. And so, guys, until next week, stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at heresjohnnypodcast@gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord and to the website. We are also on Instagram at heresjohnny_podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/heresjohnnypodcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We aren't looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers. So head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.